There's a reason Ragazzi's has been voted locally for best Italian fare. They keep their patrons well fed and hydrated. After all, Ragazzi's is home with a frozen fish bowl on special for five singles from 3 to 6. Or come in early for the nurse's happy hour from 8 to 10 a.m. and check out their newly opened patio. Stop in for Ragazzi's nationally recognized pizza or award-winning toasted ravioli and leave with a full belly and a smiling face. I guarantee you'll be coming back for more. Ragazzi's on the Hill at 4945 Daggett.
Rise and shine, St. Louis. It's the Ryan Kelly Morning After with Tim McKernan, Jimmy the Cat Hayes, and Doug Vaughn. It's time to start your day off right. Now, here's Tim, Jim, and Doug live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, 920 AM, and InsideSTL.com.
707 in St. Louis, you are listening to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. CBS Sports 105.7 HD2 FM 920 AM inside STL.com live. Gateway Buick GMC Studios. Somebody Mike McKernan, Douglas Sullivan Vaughn, Doug sitting across from you. Charlie Marlowe, Jackie Paper.
I saw him sitting over there. Hello, Chuck.
Hi, gentlemen. What's
well, so up? How are we today?
I'll tell you what. After that Cardinals game, I'm not too well. Not
you're
too good at
struggling
all,
struggling to get over it?
I barely woke up.
Oh, my gosh.
Why get out of bed if our birds can't win?
Well, there's not much reason to.
Well, there's masties, and they're about to tee off. Masties.
Well, will you watch that all day long?
Let's see what I got going on today. Well, I have a TV in my office, so I can kind of settle
in.
Oh,
well.
That was an important part of the deal.
Yeah.
You know the great Rich Gould? He takes off all 4 days of the Masters.
He's been doing this forever.
Every single year because he loves the Masters.
Really? Does he go down there at all to watch it?
Janie the Lesbian did.
I don't know if he has before, but he just likes to take vacation days and sit at his house and probably have a drink or two and just enjoy
the guitar.
The ticket system now is a lottery thing, I know, where you put your name in and maybe you'll get called for the chance to buy tickets and maybe not.
I'd like to go one day.
Why don't we all go down there and do a remote? I bet they'd like to have us in Butler's cabin.
I don't think so. I don't think that's the case at all.
Hello, friends.
You see a lot better on TV than being there anyway. When you're at a golf tournament, it's hard to know what's going on. You're five people deep.
So you're saying you're not going to go to the PGA Championship next year?
Well, there's a chance I won't.
Really?
Yeah.
You probably have to cover it.
Well, if I have to cover it, I will. But it's much easier. It's like the Olympics. It's much easier to watch and know what's going on TV.
What if we
can
get Spieth in studio? See, Master, we're going to get Spieth in studio next August.
You want to talk about golf?
Yes,
well,
I do.
Okay, we will.
Plus, the Cardinals are 0-3. Look good, though.
Well.
Matt Vasgersian is going to be with us. Get tinted STL. Captain's Log, Matt Vasgersian, 7:15. Jay Williamson, former PGA Tour pro, talking Masters with us. JW is always a great guest. And the master of the shorthanded goal, Kyle Brodziak, is going to be with us at 8:50. Blues and Blackhawks tonight, Doug. I mean, lock in. Yeah, the Cardinals
okay.
are off.
All right.
But the momentum is there. But day off. But you can sail in and watch Masties and Blues and Blackhawks. And, well, here you go.
Well, but it's an off day for the Cardinals, so I can't watch them.
Right.
If the Cardinals were playing and they were 0-3, I would still watch them over the Blues and Blackhawks and the Masties.
Oh, wow. South County, St. Charles, text in 314-880-0808.
Yep.
314-880-0808. Doug Vaughn is your enemy.
That's just me.
I agree.
It's just me.
I agree.
Charlie Marlowe is your enemy.
I can't imagine what would have to be on the air that I would want to watch.
Hold
on,
let me ask you this.
This is The Bachelor.
I'm sincerely asking this. Next week, when it could very well be Blues and Blackhawks, a week from today, game one. I don't know when it'll be. I don't. And the Cardinals are playing whoever they will be playing. Who are you watching?
I'd probably have to watch the Blues. I'd watch.
But you
the
say
Blues,
you have to watch.
It's not because
the
I don't like the Blues. I love the Blues, and I love playoff hockey. But I've just been wired as a baseball fan since I was a little kid, and that's just the thing that
okay,
I like the
fine.
Most.
To each their own. Now, for whatever reason, some hockey fans get verbally violent when people say that. Now, for me, honestly, regular season hockey games in particular, like the first few months of the season, have zero. Not zero, but very little interest to me. It's like a social thing if I were to go. Otherwise, it doesn't really do it for me. And it's mainly because of it's not just because people go, well, the NBA gets as many teams in, but the NBA, the one seeds and the two seeds, they advance. In hockey, I feel like it's a lottery. Nonetheless, when it comes down to it, even though I'm a baseball fan, when it's Blues playoff hockey, I'm watching a Blues playoff game over the Cardinals all day long. All day long. Well, it doesn't matter what year it is. That's how that. But that is me.
It's possible to watch both. That's what I would do. But if I only had one TV, I would be flipping back and forth. It wouldn't just be on the Blues.
Barnhart Brawler texting in says, "Doug, you are what is wrong with this country."
Yeah, I don't know.
That's true.
Yeah, well, he and I have been at loggerheads a long time.
The 7 o'clock hour is brought to you by Acorns. Where are you, the listener, on this? I'm curious. I assume, maybe I'm wrong on this. I just assume that people, and again, I realize, again, I'm not chastising with that clear because I don't care. I live in my own little perverted world full of to each their owns. But I would imagine, but maybe I'm wrong. I get you. You know what? I very well may be. Being in St. Louis and the whole thing with baseball and the whole deal. I don't know. But Blues playoff hockey, it's an instant call for me because Blues playoff hockey is April, ideally May. And at that point, the baseball regular season is very young.
Yeah. Oh, well, don't get me wrong. I absolutely love the Blues, and I love playoff hockey. I do. And if it came down to I could only watch one, I would watch the playoff hockey game over a regular season Cardinal game.
All right.
But it doesn't come down to that. I've got more than one TV because I am
blessed. Oh, so rich.
So I can watch both.
Some people can't afford one TV.
I would not miss a Blues hockey game in the playoffs. I wouldn't miss one.
Sounds like you're backtracking.
Well,
did Caruso text you?
No. But when you've been a Cardinal fan since you were 4 years old, that's in your blood.
I agree with you. I'm more of a baseball guy than a hockey guy, but if we're talking playoff hockey, especially Blues Blackhawks, that's must-see TV.
Yeah, you'll have to watch every second of that because you don't know what might happen.
And playoff series, you know, they get nasty. This team has history. You know there's going to be something like happened a couple years ago with a hit.
These teams just don't like each other.
You're going to hate a Seabrook or a
Wakey,
Duncan
Wakey,
Keith.
Dougie.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
I agree with Doug. I would watch the Redbirds as well. It really helps with my insomnia. Mike from the wealthy part of Washington Park. So that's the thing. The hockey people like to take shots at baseball.
Is there a wealthy
Of Washington Park?
Yeah.
One of the back rooms at the Hustler Club. Do you think if the Mighty Ducks were real that Adam Banks would have made the Chell?
I think so.
Would have made the Chell?
I don't pay attention to
NHL.
Right. You like that? You like that?
I'd never heard that before.
Also probably Fulton Reed with the big slap shot.
Guys, I'd watch Keisha Gray videos over the Blues and Cards. Thank you for bringing that up, P-Town Bulldog, because, Doug, you probably saw it last night. Keisha Gray tweeting out that she is working with Lexington Steel today. Wow.
I didn't see that. Where are they working?
I would imagine Chatsworth.
Chatsworth. So it sounds like in England.
We led with that at 11.
Oh, I miss that.
You are.
Good for you. I like the way you guys are producing that 11.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We tried to do it a little differently.
You think that would improve ratings if you led with the porn updates?
Yeah, I would just sit there on the phones and just answer and listen and watch the people write their sound-off letters to the Post's badge. Guys, I would watch the Blues, but usually can't see the screen with Doug flailing away all reverse cowgirl in me.
Okay,
lap.
Who was it, Tim?
Bouncy, Bungie Donovan's Priest?
Bungie Donovan's Priest has been...
No.
Okay.
The cousin of Moo Man.
Oh, okay.
The cousin of Moo Man has been suspended. He's been suspended of... period of 2 days time.
What is my girl on... What is going on with my girl... who I love on SportsCenter. Is she wearing a bolo tie today?
Cross-dressing.
She looks like a pilgrim. She looks like a pilgrim.
Miles Standish.
I find her to be just beautiful, and I don't know why. Maybe it's my St. Louis U High theory of, okay, I'm surrounded by a bunch of guys, and there's a female, so she's automatically absurdly attractive, but I'm really into her. Doug and I debate this every commercial break. I've been doing it for years.
Yeah.
I think she's
dressed
attractive.
Like a pilgrim. You do, too. Today she's dressed like a pilgrim. I can't dispute that.
She's the kind of girl where you wouldn't... Like, if you had a line of 10 girls, Doug, you wouldn't point her out number one.
No.
But then you keep looking at her every day on SportsCenter, and you're like, she's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And
wow.
She seems like she's fun, a cool girl.
A sport, eh?
She's girl next door attractive, but she's not va-va-va-voom.
Neither are you.
Well, that's not what she said last night.
I would bang you right now if you want. Loaded for bear. just loaded for bear. Matt Vasgersian's me with us, co-host of MLB Central. Weekdays at 9 a.m. Central on MLB Network. Visit findmlbnetwork.com for local listings. We always enjoy having him on the show. St. Louis is currently experiencing the winter of our discontent. The Rams moved just a few months ago. Missouri football turmoil, Missouri basketball irrelevant, St. Louis U basketball irrelevant. We're holding on to hopes of the Blues saving the city. Matt Vasgersian will provide inspiring words, and he will lead us out of the darkness right now on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, guys. You doing okay with the cat out of town?
Struggling mightily.
The show's actually better, I feel.
Charlie thinks the show's better. Matt, we got a problem here in St. Louis. I mean, we got a real problem. Not only the Cardinals 0-3, but they're not really looking particularly good either.
Well, you know, and I get 0-3 is certainly not the way any fan base wants to see their team start, but would you rather be St. Louis sitting on 0-3 or the Padres sitting at 0-3 without having scored a run, looking completely hopeless right now?
Mm. Outscored 25-0.
Yeah, there are worse 0-3s than the one that Mike Matheny looks at in the newspaper today. Look, you know, the Pirates are good, the Cubs are good, and I expect the Cardinals to be good this year as well. And nobody can explain why they feel like that, because there are some questions that you guys have talked about a lot all winter, I'm sure, regarding the starting pitching staff and the injury core that they're dragging around. But, you know, we've had these same kind of problems or thoughts around the Cardinals in the past, and they always seem to replenish from within, and until they prove me otherwise, I'm going to say that the Cardinals will be in the race all year long, despite the 0-3 start.
The troubling thing, I think, for the Cardinals is it's not like they're built on power or anything or speed, and yet they're not built on contact hitters either. They've struck out 37 times in the first three games. That's a really horrible combination for a team that doesn't hit the ball out of the park very much.
Yeah, and that's true. But I don't expect those numbers to continue either. I mean, you know, when you look at some of the guilty parties on the strikeout numbers, I don't think Grichuk's going to strike out that many times. He's off to a pretty rough start swinging the bat, even though between he and Stephen Piscotty, I think that's 10 strikeouts between the two of them in the three-game series, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. I don't think that continues. You know, a guy like Brandon Moss, Matt Adams, those guys will strike out. But, again, I don't see the problem there, really. When I look at their 1-9 and I know Wong's only got a couple of base hits. Carpenter's off to a slower start. They're going to be fine. Honestly, I think they're right in the thick of things. I don't know what they'll do up the middle if they have to have a long-term plan if Johnny Peralta doesn't come back when they expect him to. I'm still not sure what to expect out of Jed Jerko, because there were months when he looked really good in San Diego and hit for power. And then there were months when he was in San Diego when he looked completely lost at the plate, which led ultimately to a Triple-A demotion at one point after he had already established himself with a long-term deal. So that was a strange one, and that the jury's out on what they're going to get up the middle. But I'm not worried overall.
Matt, you know St. Louis, and it seems like if you check Facebook and Twitter that St. Louis Cardinals fans are a bit worried. We love the Cardinals so much here. Maybe it's because the way the season ended last year against the arch rival Cubs, then you hear about the winter of the Cubs all season long, and then you add an 0-3 start against the Pirates, and people already on Twitter are like ready to write this team off.
Yeah, I mean that's the hyper reactive nature of social media, and I'm sure that if I were a Cardinal fan and I was prone to, you know, posting things on social media, I'd be so sick and tired of all the Cubs hype. I mean, I have no skin in the game in the NL Central at all, and even I'm a little weary that the Cubs hype machine will just keep going and going and going. If they'd looked human in Anaheim the first few days of the season, maybe you could temper that enthusiasm a little bit. But they looked so good. Arrieta and Lester looked so good in those first two games against the Angels that Cubs hype is going to continue until they play down to earth. And I don't know when that'll happen.
Yeah, and on the flip side, Wainwright, Waka, Leak didn't look very good for the Cardinals. That doesn't help the situation either.
No, but again, those are proven commodities. You're not going to worry about that. And I mean, Adam Wainwright, it was amazing that he came back to even be able to do what he did at the end of last year. Talk to anybody who's had Tommy John surgery, and you guys have spoken to them, and so have I. Anybody that's come back from a major injury, and it's 16 months. Elbow, shoulder, 16 months. And you, once you get physically declared fit to pitch, then finding your feel is a whole other story. Velocity comes back sooner for some than others. I wouldn't worry about Adam Wainwright. I wouldn't worry about Mike Leake. I wouldn't worry about the front three and their starting staff. The rest of it perhaps is cause for concern, but I mean, listen to me trying to talk you guys off the ledge. Jesus, 0-3.
Yeah,
come on,
3 days
fine.
Here.
Yeah.
Matt Vasgersian, our guest here on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. The reason why I wasn't particularly bullish on the team going into the season and going on and on and on in January and February when I was looking at the Las Vegas odds and the over-under for the Cardinals was 87.5, wasn't the pitching. If anything, I thought the pitching might be the thing that could make them, you know, competitive for the division. I just felt like they were leveraged from a health standpoint with at least a couple of the five, all of them with injury history or some issues with injuries in recent years that forced them to trend down, such as Michael Wacha. But taking a look at the offense, I didn't feel like they addressed it at all in the offseason. Now, interestingly enough, Matt, and I don't know, I'm sure you guys have talked with John Mozeliak quite a bit, but when we were down at spring training, and we had Bill DeWitt sit down with us, and then we had John Mozeliak sit down with us, and we asked him about the Jason Hayward defection to the Cubs. The thing that stood out to both of them, and these were independent interviews, and they told the same story, so it corroborated it, is not getting David Price. And the Hayward thing, I don't want to say that it didn't concern them, but it clearly Price was the thing that they thought they had, and they were really surprised by, and it took them back. But they didn't then go, okay, we got to go get Cespedes, we got to go get Upton. They were happy with what they had in the outfield, and then therefore first base. And that's the thing that I just disagreed with. Now, it is only three games in, so you'll see how it plays out. But last night, in the third game of the season, you're trotting out a lineup where Matt Holliday's your third hitter, as he's been for years, and Yadier Molina's your fifth hitter. They combined for 8 home runs total in 2015. Brandon Moss is hitting cleanup. And then the bottom of the lineup features guys like Colton Wong and Hazel Baker and Jerko, and you're going, what in the hell is this? That just doesn't make sense. And if that's what you're trotting out in game three, why wasn't more attention paid in the offseason to upgrading an offense that struggled last year?
You bring up great questions there, Timmy. By the way, you sick? You sound weird.
Doug, I don't know. I feel like I'm on my game, but maybe the meds are off today.
Yeah.
I know how that feels.
Yeah.
I've got like 1,200 milligrams of Flexerol rather swimming through me right now because I got a blown out back.
Do you really?
I'm a train wreck right now. I mean, honestly, I can't believe that I'm not seeing like dancing elephants when I go out there to do this little show that nobody watches.
That show. I love that show, by the way.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, actually,
I joke. We're having a good time with it this year, and it's great. I love our little group that we have. But back to the Redbirds, if I could go a little Mike Shannon on you for a minute.
Oh, nice.
I get the consternation over the whiff on Price, if in fact it was a whiff. But I'm going to take it from the other perspective. If the Cardinals had slotted that money for Price and Price alone, I don't know that there's an obligation to fall in love with a player that you didn't want to begin with. And I kind of like that because so often you'll see a team that has that check to write, and I'll go right to the Red Sox in the winter prior to last year. They wanted to spend their way out of the cellar of the AL East. They wrote a terrible check to Pablo Sandoval.
Yeah.
They wrote what could end up being a terrible check to Hanley Ramirez based on whatever aptitude he shows at first base this year, and I know he's off to a good start. But it was almost like, okay, we've got some money to spend. We better put it into this year's market right now, even though we might not love those players. And I'm not saying that was the case. They may have loved them, and if they did, then maybe that's why they made some changes upstairs.
Right.
But, you know, the Yankees have done the same thing. The Jacoby Ellsbury deal a couple years ago, that might go down as one of the shakiest contracts in baseball if Jacoby Ellsbury is unable to stay on the field. I mean, you bought a guy off of one huge year. So for John Mozeliak to show some restraint, maybe they have a trick up their sleeve. And I'm thinking about some of the teams that are not long to become corpses in baseball this year. I mean, there is such a discrepancy between the haves and the have-nots in the game, and the Cardinals are one of those few teams that might be in the upper gray. That is to say, they're not a 100-win team, but they're certainly not a cellar dweller the way the Phillies, Reds, Padres, and others could be. And if the Angels want to save some money because they've got to pay Pujols and company way too much, maybe there's a deal to be made for a bat. If the Padres want to start paring down that payroll because what they spent and built last year didn't work, and if they start entertaining offers for Ross or Cashner or Shields, maybe one of those guys ends up in San Diego. And I'm sure that John Mozeliak and his staff have considered all those things before they went, oh, wow, we've got all this money we wanted to spend on David Price. Let's buy something else.
It just seemed like the Cardinals were in position to shell out some money. I don't know what they have now for trades. You know, the minor league system has pretty much been gutted. Those guys are all up now playing.
I mean, maybe a young outfielder. I know that you're certainly not going to give up on one of those guys, but you do have to give to get. And I don't know if at some point they determine like a Tommy Pham becoming a trade piece, or the suggestion that they're going to trade somebody like Segrist or Grichuk is probably ridiculous, or even Stephen Piscotty. But maybe in the right package. I don't know. I think there are more options there than we see. And again, there are some teams that if their Aprils continue the way some think they may, and I'm thinking of that aforementioned group of clubs,
right?
You know, there's a trade partner there somewhere.
Matt Vasgersian, always great to have him on the program. He's the co-host of MLB Central, weekdays at 9 a.m. on MLB Network. Visit findmlbnetwork.com for your local channel listing. Matt, best of luck with the back, sir. And all the Flexium as well.
Yeah, Flexium. I'm gonna add. It's gonna be a cocktail today. Caffeine, Tylenol with codeine, and some of those Ben Gay patches. We'll see what it cooks up at 10 o'clock
well,
Eastern.
Nice. Well, I'm gonna have to watch this.
Vicodin works pretty well too. You got some of that lying around somewhere.
See you guys.
Peace. Matt Vasgersian with us here on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. It is the 7 o'clock hour, the Ryan Kelly Morning After, which is brought to you by Acorns Golf Course. Doug goes out there. I think I'm gonna play more golf this year. I haven't played. I used to play every day, and then I started playing poker, and then I stopped playing. But I think I'm gonna get back into it.
That'd be a good course for you to
Acorns
play.
Acorns might be the place I need to go.
Yeah,
shave some strokes off my game, baby.
You could bring your A game or bring your C game, and you know, move up to the lower tees. You can play like 6,800 yards or like 5,700 yards.
Oh.
Either way. So if you're first starting out early in the season, like right now, your game is not in tip-top shape, move up to one of the earlier tees. That's fine. That's fine to do. Now, my favorite hole out there, Tim, was number 7.
Okay.
Bit of a snootful. Long par 5 up the hill. There's a little water. The green is narrow. There's not a lot of pars on hole number 7. Not a lot of par. And as we said last week, they're looking to establish a course record. When I was out there, I said, what's the course record? As I do at every course,
right,
just to see if I might contend someday. And they did not have one.
Ooh.
So it's wide open now. It's wide open for somebody to go out and shoot like a 63, 62 maybe, and establish a course record there.
Let me ask you this,
Chuck.
Have you ever been on hole number 7 and you hit your second shot into the trap? And then you're in absolute jail.
Absolute jail.
Awesome.
I have not played the course. I've been out there, looked around, but I haven't played.
But you know that hole number 7 is a snootful.
Yeah.
Well, we drove around the course. I drove all around the course and looked at it.
Look at you.
It's a nice course.
Of course, you go down the course.
Well, you tell me where else in the area you can get a $2 beer, not to mention they have 12 different draft beer options there, several big screens to enjoy after your round. It's a really nice place. Only 20 minutes from the JB Bridge.
Acorns, the sponsor of the 7 o'clock hour here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. We'll be joined by Jay Williamson coming up at 8 o'clock as the Masters teeing off right now. I got to open up my leaderboard, Doug. I got a lot of DraftKings teams. That's what I got. Who's teeing off first?
I think it's Jesper Parnevik.
Jesper. Whatever happened to him? He hasn't been around much lately, has he?
Jim Herman. Didn't he win this past week in Houston? Is that the guy who got emotional on the 18th green after he won?
He may have won, Doug.
I don't know. I know that he's a heck of a player.
So I got my spreadsheet here to make sure I diversify properly with all these pliers. The pliers I went with the most, Jason Day and Adam Scott. But the key into doing well in these daily fantasy is to get the guys who are inexpensive who make the cut, and that way you keep accumulating points on Satter's bin and Sun's bin. Otherwise, you finna get shipped, even if you got the winner.
And you've been following all these middle of the pack and lower players.
Not at all, but I read like the Dickens. You don't need to do a lot of reading to know that right now on DraftKings, you just pick the pitcher who is pitching against the Cardinals, and you get about 30 points. Juan Nicasio last night for $6,000, which is one of the cheapest salaries on DraftKings, was the play of the day.
And that would have been a good play.
did quite well with seven strikeouts the night before.
Juan Nicasio was the best pitcher in the major leagues in the spring. He was number one. He was virtually unhittable all spring. I thought I would pick him up late in the fantasy draft.
What happened?
Nobody else would notice this, and somebody else noticed it, and he went.
Just like I got Carlos Correa from you, now he's got three home runs, went 4-for-4 last night. I picked him 6. He was ranked 12th. I said, I don't care. It ain't a reach.
Yeah, that's who I would have taken.
Let's pump the brakes, though.
I would have taken Nicasio based on
acknowledge the South Side Seaman or the 72 Dolphins. Acknowledge it.
First of all, I will say that Carlos Correa, I'll buy stock in him. Juan Nicasio.
Bold play.
It's one outing. He had one career major league start entering the year. So I would like to see 4, 5, 6 starts before I anoint him.
Well, I don't know where it came from, and I don't think the Pirates knew where it came from either. They weren't expecting this. All I can tell you is look at the numbers he put up in the spring. He was virtually unhittable. Nobody touched him throughout the Grapefruit League.
Again, huh?
Yes.
He wasn't even in the plans to be a starter.
I like his early start to the season, Doug, but I want to see more. Sometimes these guys that have never started over the course of a major league season, they kind of they run out of gas.
I would not expect him to be a 20-game winner, no. I'm just saying ride him while he's hot. That's what the Pirates are doing.
I just wouldn't worry about not drafting Juan Nicasio.
Who got him, Producer Jerome?
I don't know.
Justin in Columbia.
He was going to be like,
Wow, you get him?
Did you?
No, the guy I'm playing.
Can't hear you.
Chasey Lane.
Getting him.
Who's that?
I don't know, Jason, Carpet Munchers?
I don't know if that's something
Carport. I think it's Carport.
What I say.
But
Seamaster, get my go over Thompson Coburn on the line just in case.
Here's my take on fantasy baseball, though, in terms of starting pitchers. For example, the first day of my season in terms of starting pitchers, I got a couple pretty good ones in Noah Syndergaard, Scott Kazmir. They go out there, both scoreless outings. I'm feeling good about my ERA, which is 0. I'm feeling good about my whip, which is like 0.05, right?
I like my whip I got at Gateway Buick.
That's right. And then last night, I throw two what I would call mid-level starters in Jeff Samardzija and Andrew Cashner, who both had like typical Jeff Samardzija, Andrew Cashner outings, which is like what? 3 runs in 5 innings or
7 or 8 strikeouts.
4 runs in 6. And like there's no point of starting those guys. They have no value. All they do is blow up your ERA and whip, give you a couple strikeouts, rarely ever win. It's like you have to have aces or closers or maybe throw in some 8th inning guys to handcuff your closers. But there's no point unless you're trying to...
I didn't even draft starters. I didn't even worry about it.
Unless you're trying to stack wins or strikeouts at the end of a week, why would you start like a number 4 starter?
Well, wins and strikeouts count just as much as any other category.
I'm just saying, if you blow up your whip and ERA early in the week, though, you're kind of screwed.
Just for that category.
But that's two categories that usually go together.
You're never going to win strikeouts or wins unless you have some good starters.
I understand that. And if at the end of the week you need to try to get some wins and strikeouts, I would do that. But to start those guys like on a Tuesday or Wednesday, I feel like you're just kind of sacrificing whip and ERA.
I had one guy blow me out of the water yesterday. A fellow by the name of Sean Tolleson, Rangers reliever.
How'd he do? He had a nice 9th inning.
He comes in with a 1-run lead and thinking, well, boy, I'm walking in some tall cotton. He gives up
all to save.
He gives up 5 runs without recording an out, including a home run to Robinson Cano, who my opponent, it's Vaughn, had. So I'm telling you, it was a tough.
It's Vaughn's early?
Yeah.
How about Colin McHugh yesterday?
Colin McHugh gave up
like 5 runs.
He didn't even get out of the first. The Yanks got him.
Yeah, in a third of an inning.
Carlos Beltran, who looks like he's not eating metabolic meals, did some raking.
Holy Cardinals moly. Could use him back.
Yeah. Anybody really?
Yeah. Carlos Beltran had a really good end to last season.
He was such a good player here.
And a good guy.
He really was a great guy and a great player.
How about that lineup last night? I mean, I guess I don't know what the hell else they can do, but I mean, you're 4-8. I'm just going, what in the world?
Yeah, that's one of the weakest lineups they have put on the field in years.
And for the third game of the season. Third game of the season. It was Moss, Molina, Wong, Jerko, and Hazelbaker. I mean, Yadier Molina's just not a number 5. And Matt Holliday's not a number 3. But I don't know.
Right now, their big gun in the lineup is a guy whose name we hadn't heard of until about a month ago, in Jeremy Hazelbaker.
Right. We almost had the magic of the top of the second Cardinal lineup card featuring Hazelbaker in the 8th spot and some guy named Bowman in the 9th spot.
Right.
who came out and threw well later in the game, for the record, and that became the focus of the Fox Sports Midwest postgame show. You would have thought Jeremy Haselbreaker broke Mark Witten's record by how much they showed that. I was thinking as I was watching that last night, I hope there is an afterlife and Joe Strauss is tuned into the Fox Sports Midwest postgame show, because that will be his heaven. Because you would have thought Jeremy Haselbreaker broke Hank Aaron's record, or Barry Bonds' record, if you acknowledge it. They showed his catch and his home run. What are they doing? Like an American Idol now? And that's the thing that Strauss used to love. After the Cardinals were struggling and they were in a losing streak and they got their asses kicked, they would just like show highlights from the 82 Cardinals.
Let's go back to
and he would call in and give the cat crap about it. That's what I was thinking of last night. It's rough, brother, and I don't see it turning around right quick. Unfortunately, it's an unfortunate view, but it's the way that it is. Also, I don't know what Vasgersian's talking about trades. I don't know what they can do there.
If it could turn around anywhere, it might turn around in a place like Atlanta, where they'll be this weekend. The Braves are awful. I mean, it wouldn't stun me if the Cardinals were to win two or three of those games.
What if they were 0-6 entering opening day in St. Louis on Monday?
That would be tough.
With 90% chance of thunderstorms on the home opener day.
Who do they have pitching tomorrow, Martinez or Garcia?
I believe Carmart on Friday.
I would expect those two to pitch well against the Braves. And Wainwright will come back.
But they're throwing Tehran in one of the games. He's very good.
Well, what is it about
that Whistler fellow?
What is it about the
Whistler,
way this
the emailer?
Cardinal club is raking that doesn't make you think they could handle any pitcher that the opposition throws out there?
Thank you.
I looked at yesterday as a positive, because that's how I look at things, all right?
Good
for
you,
sir. The first couple games, you average what? You average 13.5 strikeouts per game. Okay, they only struck out 10 times yesterday, Doug. That's called progress.
Yep.
And then you look at defensively, over the course of 9 innings, they only committed 3 errors, okay?
Yep.
That's only 1 per 3 innings.
Yep.
And then I looked at it offensively with 4 hits. They were saving their hits for the weekend.
Yep. How do you view it now?
Well, if this series had happened in the middle of the year, you'd go, well, the Cardinals hit a road bump. What was that all about? And because it happens at the beginning of the year, we tend to think, well, this is going to be the worst team that we've ever seen.
Yeah,
Not much positive to take out of what happened in Pittsburgh, that's for sure.
I will say this. My expectations were higher than some entering this season. Not to say I was saying 100 wins, but I think I predicted 93 wins. And it's hard not to look at the first 3 games and temper that even more. Like, I don't think they're going to be below 500, but when you look at this team now, I could see it being even less than what I thought. And if we're talking about in the 80s, but I still think in the landscape of baseball now, if you're above 500 for most of the season, you're probably in that second wild card for the whole year.
Yeah. Well, nothing makes a team look flatter or without life than just not hitting. When you don't get a guy on base and when you don't ever hit the ball, I mean, you look like you got absolutely nothing. And they did. They had nothing these first 3 days. It's got to turn around a little bit. We know that Piscotty, Grichuk, Holiday, they got to be better than what we've seen so far.
Better, yes, but what is the ceiling realistically? And that was my whole contention over the course of the offseason. Now, I will say this. You know what Vasgersian said when I asked him about the Cardinals' lack of aggression in pursuing offense this offseason, and they didn't pursue it. And this isn't stuff that was necessarily said publicly, but their view is what they had was better than Justin Upton. I'll tell you that, because that was the guy I'm like, okay, you didn't get Price. I do believe them I don't believe these conspiracy theories that Bill DeWitt is hoarding money for his bottom line. I just don't believe that. If you want to believe it, God bless. But I thought, okay, get Justin Upton. Hell, I'd rather have Justin Upton than the dollars that Jason Hayward was getting, personally, especially considering how bad offensively this team is. And on top of it, it's only going to get worse because Holiday's numbers and Molina's numbers are only going to get worse with age. Plus, there's injury history in the last 365 days with both of them. And it wasn't addressed. But it wasn't necessarily, unless they were spinning it, but we interviewed Bill DeWitt, we interviewed John Mozeliak individually, face-to-face, could see everything, the whole deal. And they were clearly content with what they had in the outfield and offensively because the focus was David Price. So and all of us, including myself, somebody who's not does not have high expectations for this team before the 3-game losing streak, is that, yeah, the pitching is the part that would be good, the starting pitching. But they wanted to go out and get David Price, great pitcher, you know, top 10 pitcher in the game. I'm looking at it going, God, how do you not tend to the offense? But I guess, you know, that's why I said yesterday, 2016, and also said it over the offseason, 2016 might be the year in a way like 2007 was, although that featured an exorbitant amount of injuries, where you kind of pay off the debt for 2000 through 2006. And this might be the year where you kind of pay off the debt for 2009 through 2015. And by that, I mean, in order to have Matt Holliday 2009 through 2015, you had to sign him to the long-term deal, or I guess 2010 after he signed the deal in the offseason after 2009. And same with Yadier Molina. These guys are not what they were, but they still are on the team and on the payroll, and you don't put them on the bench. So you're stuck with that. And therefore, guys such as Carpenter, Piscotty, Grichuk, Wong need to pick up the slack for two guys who at one time were great, but now no longer are likely to be. It doesn't mean that they won't be. It's always probabilities, and it's unlikely. And on top of it, the trends have been going down, not just from performance, but also from health. So you're leveraged in that capacity. And so that's why I don't know, when it gets down to it, what they really could have done. So over the course of this thing, if it continues to not go necessarily this bad, I can't imagine it's going to go this bad. But over the course, there's going to be a lot of anger, and it's going to be directed at Mike Matheny, because that's par for the course. And I'll go after, you know, my criticism of Matheny for postseason strategic moves in 2013 and 2014 all day long. But as far as what's going on here, this isn't on Mike Matheny, and I don't know if it will be on Mike Matheny, because I don't know what kind of team he was handed. And I don't know if you can really blame Mazalok either, because this is the, like I said, I think this might be where you have to kind of pay off the debt for having Holliday and Molina locked in for a long amount of time.
I think they're convinced that both Piscotty and Grichuk will be big time players.
I don't think they're convinced. I think they were stuck with it.
I don't know. I would disagree with that. I think Piscotty is going to be an outstanding everyday outfielder. I think Grichuk is too. And they certainly didn't want to block either one of them. They still could have gotten Upton and put Holliday at first base or Piscotty at first base, pick whichever, and Upton in the outfield, and then deal either Adams or Moss. Keep one of them for the bench and deal the other one. They could have done that.
And if they could have got Cespedes on the type of deal that the Mets got him for, I don't know if that was possible, and just because Cespedes had played with the Mets. But I will say this, there's a lot of bad free agent deals to some of these big outfielders over the years, and Matt Vasgersian brought it up with an Ellsbury, and you look at Jason Worth.
Absolutely,
and
the
Jason
Cardinals
Bay.
Have avoided those. They really have, with the exception of Tino Martinez and Mark Mulder, which were not really long term deals. And that's one of the reasons why, if not, you know, next to the farm system, the reason why they've been able to be consistently competitive every year, including 2007. They even had a little bit of a run when they were a below 500 team. So I'm fine with that. And then when you talk about Cespedes, Charlie, that's what it goes back to. I don't know what they do, where they put him. Now you go, well, they put him in left field. Okay, then you put Holliday at first. All right, then what are you doing? They were really sold on Brandon Moss. That's one thing that, you know, whether we agree or not, unless John Mozeliak was just bluffing off his stack, he was so high on Moss. And that's not just, I mean, it's three games in. What do you know? But that he's going to be able to be there. So they were kind of stuck with what they have. Johnny Peralta wasn't trade bait. You're not going to trade Matt Carpenter. You don't want to trade Matt Carpenter. Colton Wong, I was wondering when they signed Jerko, as I think Colton Wong might have been, if Colton Wong was a trade piece, because Colton Wong tweeted out, interesting offseason, right when that move hit. But they were kind of stuck with what they have, and that's why, you know, it doesn't mean that it's going to be absolutely dreadful like it has been the first three games of the season, but there just weren't moves to be made. And that's the part that I mean by that's why I mean that this might just be the season where they just have to kind of pay it off.
Well, they did try real hard to get Hayward. I mean, they threw a lot of money at Hayward, a lot of it. And I think if that deal had gone through, they would be looking at the same team they had last year, and they'd certainly be a lot better off than they are now.
I also think this organization...
But I mean, going back to what you said you think they really believe that Stephen Piscotty and Randall Grichuk are going to be stars.
Yeah, well, they still wanted Hayward.
Okay, so if Piscotty and Grichuk are going to be stars and you're stuck with Holliday, where does he fit?
Piscotty or Holliday would have played first base.
Okay, well, then they would have had to trade.
That's what I said. They would have had to deal Moss or Adams.
Which I thought they were going to deal Adams
one of them
anyway.
On the bench.
I don't know why they're here. I don't know. But
Moss is a valuable guy because
Adams is the guy that I thought they would trade
Yeah, Moss is a valuable fourth outfielder. These outfielders aren't going to play 162 games a year, but in most years they're not going to play 120.
And then you have the you know, inevitable domino effect, because they'd be fine without Johnny Peralta, but there's a domino effect because now it weakens your bench, and now you have matchups that you otherwise wouldn't have, where, for example, on opening day, Colton Wong is facing a left-hander, whereas normally, if Peralta doesn't get hurt, Jerko's playing second, and you don't have the lefty-lefty issue, which has been a debacle for Colton Wong. So there's a domino effect to the injuries, and that's the other element of the whole thing that I guess has already happened, but I think there's going to be greater attrition because these guys are leveraged from a health standpoint. And that's not just the older guys like Holiday and Molina. Randall Grichuk hasn't proven to be able to be healthy throughout the course of a season. So it's that element as well. I just don't know what realistically they could have done differently. So therefore I don't have this anger like, God, you missed this obvious play. I just don't know what they can do in general. I don't know what's out there this upcoming offseason, because we looked at the free agents after 2016, and it's not like it's this glamorous list, and that's why I thought Upton would make sense, but it would require trades, and I understand not wanting to trade Piscotty or Grichuk.
But that's not really the Cardinals' MO, and I think you look at the offseason, but this ownership group, DeWitt, Mozeliak, they've always made deals, and I could see that if they didn't spend a ton of money this offseason, which they didn't, and let's say you get Peralta back, you're hovering around 500, it's the trading deadline, Mozeliak is less likely in my mind to wait to the offseason and sign the big free agent deal to the 30-year-old player than to try to make a trade for a guy who has a year and a half or 2.5 years left of control. That's kind of his MO, is get somebody that they can control for 2 or 3 years, not get the guy when he's 30 and have to sign him to the 6-year, $140 million deal. I can see that happening. Yeah. If they're competitive, if they're close around the trading deadline.
I don't know what their big trade chips are anymore. They don't seem to have, I guess they got the pitcher at AAA.
Reyes,
who's suspended for 50 games. I don't think they're going to want to trade him. But that's the kind of guy it might take to send to one of these rebuilding teams to get a piece or two that would dramatically improve you right now.
You also have some elite pitching talent at the lower levels of the minors. There's a lot of teams now that are basically tanking. That will say, look, like the Braves, teams like the Brewers, you probably wouldn't make that deal in the division, but a team like the Padres, where you say, hey, we'll give you elite prospects that right now are in high A ball. You know, they haven't proven themselves at the upper levels of the minor leagues, but they're still very valuable. We're high draft picks. There's value there as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I think you know for sure is they'll wait a while on this. It'll be a couple months, I would think. A month and a half anyway.
Yeah, I still see this team being at least around 500. And then you see what happens if Peralta is healthy and he comes back. Let's see what the lineup looks like. You'll probably have a month or two before the trading deadline if he's healthy and he's there to see what you got, and then you kind of reassess.
Guys, the scary thing about the offense is who do you get excited about in the minors or next year's offseason? That's from Mario in Chicago, and I believe, Doug, he's one of those Pandolfos you're worried about.
They're a handful.
Opening day, we will be at Llewellyn's in Soulard. Come on by, live broadcast of the Ryan Kelly Morning After, live broadcast of the Hollywood Casino Press Box, live broadcast of the Writer's Block. It's all at Llewellyn's in Soulard, and we welcome you to join in for the fun and games at Llewellyn's in Soulard. Charlie, come on by. The water's warm.
I may be down there.
There you go. That's the spirit. You're going to be wearing your red, or old Bat's going to call in and yell at you.
I do wear my red now, and as I think I talked about the other day, Doug, Fox 2, brand new jackets.
Oh, wow.
Red Bird Red to all wear on opening day.
Right. And that's
celebrating the fact that we were best in every component of the ratings.
Oh, wow. You got different ratings than we got.
Anheuser-Busch and Maker's Mark present opening day with Inside STL. It's Monday, April 11th at Llewellyn's. Doug, the forecast, 70% thunderstorms. But that's down from 90%.
Super, yeah.
It's down from 90%. See, that's all
That's no good.
It's no good when you do the whole opening day. And also, I know I'm talking from like a TV standpoint and radio, but you pump it up. It's opening day. You got the pageantry. All the fans are taking off work. And then it's rained out, and you have to do it again the next day.
Yeah, that happened a couple years ago. I think they opened against the Cubs, and it rained for 2 hours before the game. And then they lost like 7-0. Remember that one? That was no good.
Doug, this is caller Chris.
Ah, hello, Chris. Christopher. Chris! Hello, Chris! No, he's not there, Tim.
Well, Jimmy Herbert is 2 under through 2, and I've got him on 2 of my 20 DraftKings teams. I think he's the guy who won the Shell Houston Open. Charlie, is that right?
It might be right. I was in Las Vegas all weekend. I didn't really pay any attention to sports.
You weren't wagering?
Especially the Houston Open.
Actually, I didn't
wager. Yeah, he did. He won the Houston Open.
I'll be darned.
He was thrilled to win, of course, but also thrilled to get a play at Augusta. He was very emotional. God bless him. And now here he is carrying it over at Augusta on Thursday, 5 days after he wins on the tour.
The pressure will get to a guy like that, too.
You think he'll fold like a cheap tent?
I think he might. Yeah. Yeah, pressure will get to him.
Who's the guy who missed the short putt and it benefited Nick Faldo and he like threw his club and threw his putter in the air? It was like from the late 80s. I was watching highlights of the Masters. I'm like, oh,
sounds like something Greg Norman would have
done. It wasn't the Great White Shark because it had dark hair.
I don't remember.
Charlie?
Seve Ballesteros?
It might have been.
The Dashing Spaniard?
That was the first name that came to mind.
Jay Jr. would have known.
Jennings! How about Jennings on with Joe Roderick now from 3 to 6? And he's unveiling every day.
I saw that.
His list of the top 30 MILF adult film stars. They're on number 29.
There are 30 of them, are there?
Oh, God, yeah. But you only have to be like 26 to be a MILF in the adult industry.
I'm pro boob, as you know.
Jennings.
How would you know the names of 30 different ones? In that category.
I know people who could do it.
Yourself included.
Joe Stats just texted me. He says, Scott Hoke.
Scotty Hoke.
Scotty, oh, the Hoekster. Yeah.
I don't have him on my DraftKings team. But this Scotty Hoke play. Wow, this is exciting.
You remember the Larry Miles chip that broke?
Larry Miles, baby.
Larry Miles that broke
Still
Norman's heart.
Yep. Bob Tway.
Oh, Bob Tway. Tway, the Twister, yeah.
Hey, John Vandeveld.
Oh, Vandeveld. Oh, yeah.
Rolling up his pant legs and getting in that creek.
Now, that was at the British Open, right?
It's all the same.
Doug, okay. Ian Woosnam.
Oh, Woozy, yeah. Oh, boy, the memories with Ian Woozy.
5-4, little weeble wobble.
Just a little Scotsman, was he? Or?
I think he's a weeble wobble.
He's a weeble. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, Ian Woosnam at Amen Corner. You can almost see the Butler Cabin from Amen Corner through the azaleas and the Georgia... Stop it! Stop it!
Do you find your eyes welling up with tears on a final round of the Masters?
No, I don't.
And John Vaughn, and you look at John Vaughn and you think, wow, this is what it's all about.
I'll tell you what, though. There's nothing better than coming out of a commercial break and they have that still shot. It's of like a nice flowering bush juxtaposed against a birch tree, and then they put the leaderboard up.
Oh.
And you have... And then
talk
you have,
about tradition.
And then you have the hummingbirds. I think the hummingbird is literally mic'd up with a boom mic.
Yeah, or it's audio that they're playing.
I have the tongue of a hummingbird.
What is it, busy and curious?
Bird-like cutlery cuts of the week. Doug, the Acorns Golf Links are the sponsor of our 7 o'clock hour here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After, already joined by Matt Vasgersian. We'll talk about the azaleas in about 5 minutes with JW. I like that JW. I wonder who his play is. You think it was Adam Scott, Jason Day? Spieth just hasn't been playing real well. I only got him on 3 of my teams, I think.
I like David Duval in this one. Is he still playing?
He's an analyst with the Golf Network.
Is he?
As an analyst, what I'm saying is...
He might step in. He probably brought his sticks.
What I'm saying is he's the best analyst.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Tim, how about that Smiley Kaufman this week in Augusta, Doug?
Oh, Kaufman. Wow. He may earn his nickname Smiley after he holes out at Amen Corner.
I'm excited to celebrate the amateur that has a good run, and we talk about him a lot.
Oh, what a story.
All weekend long, and then we never talk about him again.
The future of golf there, Charlie. It's fabulous to see him have a big weekend.
Boy, there's my girl dressed as a pilgrim. What the hell's that about?
It's like a bolo tie.
It's like a man bun that she's wearing.
Is it R&B artist? Like Jenna Monet? What's her name? She's beautiful. I don't know. She dresses like that. She's in the Pepsi commercial now.
She looks like she should be churning butter.
I don't know what the deal is. Yeah. It's pilgrims, Doug. Paying
not that,
pilgrims.
Not that women are supposed to do that type of work.
Is that what you were
what I meant
boy.
Was...
From Janie the lesbian's going to call
from
in
the way
now.
She was dressed.
Paul Ellen's going to call in now.
We've graduated from those days, Chuck. A woman can do anything she'd like.
That's true.
Tony the Plow Dow says, Tom Kite. Ah, sporting a nice hat.
Oh, yeah, Tom Kite. At one point, he had won more money than any other golfer in the history of the
world. Is that right? Mm-hmm. 92 U.S. Open winner, right, at Pebble? Is that correct?
Something like that. I don't remember the years.
Jeez, nice show prep.
Manchild79 helping me out. He says, Janelle Monae is fine.
Okay.
A bit skinny, though. And then he says he's keeping it 100, Doug.
And she's on the LPGA tour?
No, she's a musician.
We're back to the porn stuff. Huh?
No, she's a musician.
A musician, okay.
Janie the Lesbian texting in, what you watching the Masters on? I'm thinking, hold on a second, because she was down at Augusta last year. I'm thinking about calling in today, too. Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Janie the Lesbian, I just got ESPN on because of the girl I like. It's dressed as a pilgrim, and I have a pilgrim fetish. People don't have that as much as they used to.
Not as much as they should.
Right.
You think your forefathers wore the pilgrim outfits?
Yeah, we're talking about the first Thanksgiving.
Mine probably drank
here.
A lot of whiskey and dug potatoes out of the ground.
When did the McKernans come over here?
93?
That's it, huh?
In search of
that's
a potato?
Rather recently.
Right.
You haven't researched that to find out when they came over?
No.
I'll tell you what. You watch those commercials for like Ancestry.com. You have people saying, I grew up. I thought I was Irish. I check out the family tree. And sure enough, I'm English. Or something like
ooh,
that. Sometimes you go back there, Doug.
Right.
And what you think or thought is not necessarily true.
I saw the TV show that does that for celebrities. Did Russell Wilson found out that he was related to like English royalty?
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. He was a descendant of slaves on one side and like the king of England on another.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I didn't know it. That fascinated me.
I saw my mother-in-law without any clothes on this
that's
week.
Not on it. That's not on that show.
That's not what they're talking about. With
that's on Frank's
it's
Vacation.
Hot, though.
Yeah.
I think.
But it's interesting to go back and see when your family
here's
came
the problem,
here.
Though. I've done this before. You go to Ancestry.com or one of those sites. You start putting in your data. Dun, dun, dun. They give you a little taste of something interesting.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Wait a second. Your great uncle is pay $24.95.
Darnell Coles.
Right, that's what it is.
But that's what it is. I'm like,
and
eh.
If you'd like to know the aunt, that's probably another $50.
Right. I'm like, eh, I don't really care that much.
I had relatives on both sides do that extensive research. They have little books and everything. It's good. It's neat.
Doug, keep your eye on that amateur Bryson DeChambeau. All his irons are the same length. Thanks, Big Hoss.
Mm.
This is Rochambeau?
That's correct. I think he's playing with Spieth today.
He's on the tour.
Don't fear the Spiether. Wow, somebody sends in a picture of us. Look at this caddy. Holy moly. Scotty Piercy, PGA. Look what's doing there.
I'll tell you what, yesterday.
Could that be his wife or something?
Yes, so.
The gentleman who won the par 3 contest.
Gary Player with an ace.
Well, he did have the ace. The gentleman who won it, can't remember his name, but I saw Mike Tirico interviewing him, and his wife is smoking.
Mike Tirico's wife?
No, this gentleman who won the par 3 contest.
Most of the golfers have gorgeous wives, don't they?
Correct.
They make absurd amounts of money.
So do we.
Right. We don't. Right. We don't.
We have hot wives and girlfriends and stuff.
Well, of course.
Right. Call her Jordan's a smoke show. Doug needs to get with that.
That's what I need to be doing.
Doug, we have Jay Williamson. He's going to join us on the other side of the break. This concludes the Acorn 7 o'clock hour here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. It is CBS Sports 105.7 HD2 FM 920 AM and Inside of Steelers.